Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Brad Woodhouse with Protect Our Care, and I'm privileged to be joined by Congressman Andy Kim of New Jersey and Congresswoman Susan Wild of Pennsylvania. I think as people know by now, tomorrow, Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals will consider the Texas case, the Texas Trump case, as we've begun to call it. This is the case that Republicans and President Trump have brought to invalidate the entire Affordable Care Act, every period, every comma, every semicolon. And with that gone would be protections for 130 million Americans with pre-existing conditions. Gone would be Medicaid expansion, which covers 17 million people. Gone would be nearly 12 million seniors. Prescription drug break that they got in terms of closing the donut hole. 2.3 million adult children will no longer be able to stay on their parents' insurance. Insurance companies will be able to charge women 50% more than men. Financial assistance that helps 9 million people purchase health care in the marketplace would be gone, and so forth and so on. And so this case has huge implications. Now, you know, the Republicans have been on a 10-year war on American health care. They have voted four, five, six dozen times in the House when they had the majority to roll back the Affordable Care Act. They've cast similar votes in the Senate. Obviously, in 2017, the House passed a bill and went and celebrated with Donald Trump at the White House to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The Senate came within a single vote of passing its own repeal bill. And all of this resulted in a political train wreck for Republicans and swept Democrats into the majority in the House of Representatives and helped sweep the two people we have on this call on today into the House of Representatives. Yet, with all the political baggage that is created for Republicans, they persist. President Trump and DOJ have joined in this case with 18 other Republican states to invalidate the entire Affordable Care Act. And that's why we are pulling out all the stops. We are Protect Our Care itself is doing 16 events in 14 states over the course of today and tomorrow to highlight this and the dangers of this case and the ongoing Republican war on healthcare. We also have ads that have gone up both nationally tomorrow and in a number of states, including targeting Senators Martha McSally, Courtney Gardner, Tom Tillis, and Joni Ernst. So we're pulling out all the stops to highlight this. You know, the Republicans in the House of Representatives have had on at least two occasions, if not more, the opportunity to denounce this suit and to vote against its funding or the DOJ spending money on this suit. And they have all Republicans, virtually all Republicans, have sided with President Trump in this case. So with that, let me turn it over to our first speaker, Congressman Andy Kim of the 2nd Congressional District of New Jersey. Congressman Kim.
Hi, thank you for having me on. And just to flag, it's the 3rd Congressional District in New Jersey. And look, I wanted to join up, and I'm so grateful for the Protect Our Care Coalition for continuing to pull people together and work on these issues because it is so urgent. I simply would not be a member of Congress today were it not for the overwhelming desire and need and demand of the people of New Jersey to be able to improve our health care and move us forward. And I hold at least one town hall every single month since I've been sworn in to Congress, and no issue comes up more still today than health care. And it's about making sure that we are expanding and moving our country forward and getting more and more people the care that they need and deserve but also about trying to make sure that we're focused on where the rubber hits the road and doing everything we can to be able to control costs and be able to make that more affordable for patients and for others that are seeking the health care. On the campaign trail, and still to this day, I constantly go back to this fact that 40% of Americans can't handle a $400 emergency. And this is the moment that we're in, where we're the richest, most powerful country in the world, yet so many people in this country are living with that level of fragility each and every day. My job has been to go and talk with the people in my district about these needs and what it is that they want, and they just overwhelmingly say that they want to be able to move forward, not backwards. And these attacks on the Affordable Care Act are exactly that. It's about moving us backwards at a time when we should be trying to think about what it is that we can be improving. It is exemplifying putting politics before the people in terms of these attacks on the ACA, and is why I'm going to be standing alongside Congresswoman Wild and Protect Our Care Coalition and many others to be able to do what we can on this. The last town hall that I did, and I just wanted to make this point, was focused, it was at the Toms River Library in Ocean County, and it was focused entirely on the opioid crisis. The opioid crisis, which has been devastating my district and districts across the country. And when we hear from people talk about what the ability for the Medicaid expansion and these other programs and just having healthcare at large is done to be able to help try to address this crisis, which is still one that's raging out of control, but to just think that we have seen Congress and the President and others talk about the priority that we all should have to try to help those that are struggling through the opioid crisis and the tens of thousands that we lose every single year. I think it's upwards of 70,000 that we're losing just last year due to drug overdose. The idea that while leaders in Washington are talking about this and what we need to do to address the opioid crisis, and then we see some of those same people supporting this effort to gut the ACA, which and the Medicaid expansion and others that have been the primary tools by which we have been able to try to save lives with the opioid crisis, just shows the divisiveness of this all and what it is that we're trying to deal with here. You know, we can list all the stats that are out there, but what it really comes down to is just about saving people's lives and making sure we're dealing with that each and every day and trying to just measure each and every one of our actions based on the number of people and their lives that would be affected by this. And when you go through that and see what would happen if the rug is pulled out from under our nation and with these attacks on the ACA, it would be devastating. It would absolutely be devastating. And I think about that each and every day with my district and those that would be struggling and those that whose lives would be put at even greater risk if these efforts go through. And that's the personal and just sheer human face of this that I'm trying to make sure that I'm always mindful of and always try to make sure that we are injecting into the conversation and the debates that we have in Congress. And again, just grateful and proud to stand alongside Congresswoman Susan Wild and others who are going to be right there with me, making sure we're protecting people's care.
Great. Thank you, Congressman Kim. And with that, let me turn it over to your colleague, Congresswoman Susan Wild of Pennsylvania.
Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it, Brad. And I am happy to be on this call with my good friend, Andy Kim. And I'm grateful that Protect Our Care is keeping this issue on the forefront and has invited press to participate in this call because it's pretty clear to me that notwithstanding multiple defeats over the years to do away with the Affordable Care Act or to repeal it or dismantle it, that the case for winning health care battles continues to be made at the ballot box every single time. You know, it's interesting that last year when I was running for my first term in Congress, my Republican opponent fairly late in the game suddenly decided to come out in favor of protections for people with pre-existing conditions, as did, I noticed, a number of opponents across the country on the Republican side. And yet, as they were shown, and as Brad mentioned, this issue single-handedly was responsible, I believe, for the huge majority or the real blue wave that we saw last year, because voters are healthcare voters, by and large. I'm in a district that's very purple. We have an almost equal number of Democrats as Republicans and independents. And as I always say, when people are sitting around their kitchen table talking about their medical bills, talking about the cost of their healthcare premiums, whether they're going to even go to see a doctor because their deductibles are so high, those people aren't talking about party ideology or political issues. They're talking about how are they going to get their health care. So I think this is an issue that we really, needs to be put to bed for once and for all. And yet, you know, notwithstanding multiple votes to try to repeal the ACA, all of which failed in Congress, now they're coming at it from a different direction and pursuing this in the courts. I'm hopeful that the appellate court is going to overturn the decision of the federal district court, although I don't know whether I'm optimistic that that's going to happen. But it's time for us to be building on the successes of the ACA and making it better, making it stronger. That's something that I think that we've done a good job of in Congress in just the last 6 months, including passing the Protecting People with Pre-Existing Conditions Act, which, of course, Senator McConnell has said that we'll never make it to the Senate floor for a vote, but we in the House passed that bill, and I'm happy to say that I had an amendment that went with that bill that would prevent this administration or any future administration from making any policies or changing any rules that would raise premiums, including for people with pre-existing conditions. And that amendment passed overwhelmingly with 78 Republican votes, astonishingly. We need to see more of that. We need to see more from our colleagues across the aisle working with us to make healthcare more affordable and available to every American. I just want to give you some a couple of statistics about right here in Pennsylvania. According to the Urban Institute, 858,000 Pennsylvanians would lose coverage if the ACA is repealed. That's almost 860,000 Pennsylvanians, and would lead to 133% increase in the uninsured rate. And that includes 89,000 young adults in Pennsylvania who are on their parents' health care plans, who, of course, would lose care if the ACA were to go away. In this state, Medicaid expansion was life-saving. It allowed 800,000-plus Pennsylvanians to qualify for Medicaid. And for many folks here, that meant having access to health care for the very first time. Just this morning, I was at an event with Senator Casey, also dealing with this issue, the ACA and the pending lawsuit or the pending appeal. And we had two young women speak, and I thought it was very interesting. Both of these young women are on Medicaid because of Medicaid expansion. Both of them work, but they are what we classify as the working poor, cannot afford health insurance otherwise, and are trying very, very hard to piece together a living, doing the kinds of jobs that they are doing on a part-time basis, but still battling chronic medical problems. And they really, I thought, exemplified why Medicaid expansion is so important. So many people in this country think of Medicaid as something that only people who are lazy and unwilling to work need. And these young women who spoke at this event this morning were exactly the example of why Medicaid expansion was so incredibly important. And finally, I just want to say that right here in my district, which is Pennsylvania 7, we have 300,000 people with pre-existing conditions. We can't go back to a time when insurance companies can deny these people coverage or charge them more just for those pre-existing conditions. I mean, that's when they need the insurance the most, whether it's a life-saving cancer treatment or insulin for their child who has type 1 diabetes or inhalers for something as common as asthma. So as I said, I don't see this as a partisan issue. I don't know why Republicans continue to treat it as one. I think that our voters are sick and tired of having their health care be treated as a political football. And it's the issue that I most often hear about from my constituents, whether it's I have a several mothers of kids with diabetes who I hear from often, people dealing with chronic illnesses, and then these families who depend on Medicaid expansion to afford insurance. So I tell them that I will do everything I can in the House of Representatives to protect their care. I think that's why I voted to pass the resolution that strengthened Congress's hand to intervene against this lawsuit, and I'll continue to lead legislation that protects people with pre-existing conditions and that lowers the cost of health care and prescription drugs for everybody. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Brad, and thank you.
Great. Thank you, Congresswoman. I really appreciate it. And you hit on an important point there, which is to really contrast what Republicans are doing. I mean, let's just go through this. I mean, Republicans are in court to invalidate the entire Affordable Care Act with no plan for its replacement, for no plan for protecting people with pre-existing conditions, no plan for protecting young people who are on their parents' policies, no plan for requiring that insurance companies actually sell decent insurance that covers people and that people can count on. Now, Democrats, on the other hand, in the House and to the extent that they can in the Senate, but particularly in the House, have already passed legislation to protect people with pre-existing conditions by banning the sale of junk plans, to restore open enrollment. You know, we have seen the uninsured rate climb in this country in part because of the deliberate sabotage of the marketplaces by this president and his appointees in the HHS. Part of that is by making, you know, reducing the money that goes to inform people about open enrollment, to advertise about open enrollment, to do outreach, to have counselors, to have navigators. And the House of Representatives is acting to do all of these things to at least reverse the sabotage that has been inflicted on the healthcare system by President Trump. But beyond that, they are working, and I think if the reporting is correct, we'll soon see something bold on prescription drug prices, something bold on affordability. And you contrast that with Republicans whose policies would simply rip coverage away from millions of people and spike people's costs. I'm with you, Congresswoman. I don't really understand why Republicans continue to do this. It's a political loser for them. It was in 2018, and if they continue down this path, it will be again in 2020. With that, Whitney, let's take questions from reporters, if there are any.
Of course. At this time, if you have any questions, if you can press *3 on your phone to enter the Q&A queue. Again, that's *3.
All right, we've got a bunch of reporters on this call, so all right, good. Whitney?
All right, our first question is going to come from Shira Stein at Bloomberg Law. Shira, you are live.
Hi, thanks for doing this call. I'm curious why Democrats haven't taken what some see as the obvious action of increasing the individual mandate penalty to even just $1, which could mess with some of the argument that has been used to strike down the Affordable Care Act.
Hey, this is Brad. I'll start. I mean, I think if we had the Senate and the White House, maybe we would do that. But right now, there isn't any hope or chance that that if the House passed something like that, that it would come into law. And I'm certainly not an attorney. I don't know if either our other speakers are, but I think there's some sense that the lawsuit itself has such weak legal standing that it would only potentially strengthen their standing if Congress was taking some action to intervene or to adjust the law to respond to the lawsuit. I mean, I think the argument in court is that this doesn't have any legal standing to begin with, and that the tax is still in place. It's just at zero.
And Susan Wild here, I would concur in what Brad said. You know, it's almost futile at this point with Mitch McConnell there. But I have to say that specific question of raising the individual mandate isn't something that occurred to me, and I'm going to take a look at that when I get back to Washington later today.
Next question?
Our next question is going to come from Samuel McQuillan, also at Bloomberg Law. Samuel, you are live.
Hi, thanks for doing this. I'm just curious, what can be done to alleviate some of the immediate bleeding from people on Medicaid expansion who would be losing coverage? Is there a bipartisan way through policy to keep maybe just some of these people on, whether it's through requirements or allowing certain states to choose?
If either of the Congress people want to respond to that.
Well, I'm not sure.
Hi,
go ahead.
Well, on this, I mean, that's certainly something that I know we're looking into, and I've been talking with a number of Democratic members about just, you know, what are some of the things that would happen if this would go into effect. And, you know, this is the kind of situation that, you know, we just find so ridiculous that, you know, we need to even be trying to figure out what it is that we can salvage if this were to move forward. So, you know, it is something that we need to be very clear on, and we have taken steps to look into that. I don't know if we can get the kind of bipartisan support that we need to be able to do this. And as Congressman Wild has mentioned, you know, we have seen the legislative graveyard over on the Senate due to Senator Mitch McConnell. So, you know, that is something that just jeopardizes so many different aspects of this. And when we come think about feasibility, really worries me about what will actually happen. But regardless, you know, if the ACA is overturned, we would have a health crisis in this country. And that is just a matter of fact, when you'd have, you know, millions of people whose health care is now at risk. So certainly we would do everything we can to try to reduce that. But, you know, the main point of all of this is just the fact that they are manufacturing a healthcare crisis here that would put a lot of people at risk. And when we think about it in terms of human cost, it's just astronomical.
I think we're going to see a decision from the court sometime in the fall this year. And after oral arguments tomorrow, and once we're able to get a sense of how this panel of judges is going to decide, I think that we will be prepared for the eventuality of the ACA being overturned, and we will have legislation ready to go. Where it goes from the House is anybody's guess. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some states that will also be fashioning legislation to deal with that eventuality.
Hey, this is Brad Woodhouse. I'll just remind folks a little bit of what's gone on here. So the administration has not just declared war on the Affordable Care Act, but they have targeted Medicaid. I mean, you know, we have these so-called work requirements that have kicked thousands of people off of Medicaid in Arkansas and other states. Those have been challenged in court. Their talk within the administration of quote unquote block granting, you use an executive power. I don't know how they could do this. One of the big pushes in the repeal bill, Graham Cassidy, that came late and never came to the floor, would have been block granting Medicaid. Congress decided not to do that, but now the administration is talking about block granting Medicaid on its own, which is just a euphemism for cutting Medicaid. They're talking about allowing states to cap Medicaid spending, which has never been done. That's another way of just reducing the rolls. I mean, there is not a scintilla of evidence that Republicans would make any move or have any intention, or that Donald Trump cares anything about restoring health care to people who would lose it if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, particularly those on Medicaid, Medicaid expansion. He's in court to repeal the law. So, you know, the answer to what is there, you know, some bipartisan way to take care of these people? No. Whitney, any other questions?
Yep. Nope, I think that's going to be all the questions for today, Brad.
Well, this was great. Congressman Kim, Congresswoman Wild, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, except that I will be watching tomorrow's oral argument with great interest. I hope that the court does the right thing. I'm, you know, the procedural aspect concerns me. We're already at an appeals level from a federal district court decision, and as an attorney, I do understand the standard of review, so I'm a little bit pessimistic about what might happen tomorrow, but we'll be watching it with great interest.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Congressman Kim, anything to add?
I just wanted to thank everyone for jumping on this call, and just can't stress enough how important it is that the American people are informed about what is at stake right now. In the same way,
great.
That
I want to thank both of you.
So go ahead. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I thought you were done. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining this call. Also, want to thank you for your leadership on these issues in the House of Representatives. I mean, it is without a doubt the freshman class that was elected on this issue, which is leading. Leading the charge on all of these important bills and all of the important discussions that are taking place. Y'all are at the forefront of that leadership, so I want to thank y'all. I want to thank the reporters, and thank you, Whitney. And with that, we will sign off.
Thank you. Bye-bye.